Still talking about money here. Did you ever, you talked about a handshake deal with Vec when you first signed, and that's the way he was. But did you ever have an agreement with somebody, and then you went to collect, and maybe they changed their mind, reneged, or something like that?
The only thing that I can recall is the, and I'm not too, I can't remember all the details, but in one of my contracts, and this happened to be with Washington, it wasn't too free with that money, but where I received, see, after a certain date, my salary was increased because of the agreement. And then the next year, when we went to negotiate, they wanted to negotiate from the base salary that I was paid, and well, not paid, but it was in my contract the prior year, instead of adding my base, my what I actually received for the whole year. For example, just to use numbers, I can't remember what, it probably wasn't these numbers, but if I were getting $10,000, then after, say, June the 15th, I would get $2,000 bonus, or would increase my salary by $2,000. Then therefore, I thought at the end of the year, I was paid $12,000, and that's what I was going to negotiate my contract the following year from $12,000. Well, no, the ball club said, no, it was $10,000. Well, I didn't go for that, see. And I know, in fact, I think I even wrote a letter to the president of the league, Joe Cronin. But I knew, but I found out in a hurry that he's in the family of the Griffith family.
That's right.
You know, you don't have really much of a chance of him sliding, agreeing with you. And I can't remember. I think we may have split the difference or something of that nature, which I thought was kind of shady. And I don't know whether the word shady should be used, but I thought they could have been a little more ethical. It's just like today's players have, and you know, they really have much more freedom than when we played, and where the owners just controlled you. If you did not sign, you went back to the minor leagues. And even a lot of people today don't realize that how they controlled you. And if you didn't play for them, and if you didn't want to go back to minor leagues, you didn't play the game of baseball. And there's not very many professions that I know of that that's a rule. I was in business, if I wanted to move my business across the street or to another city or to another area, that was my decision. Or if I was a doctor or an attorney, I could do that. But a professional baseball player, they had you right under their thumb most of the time.
Yeah. Up until Marvin Miller came along anyway.
Well, he gave him a little more freedom.
Yeah. What's the most you ever got paid in a year?
I think the most I've ever got paid in a year was $18,000. And then on top of the World Series,
yeah.
I think.
I know, and we were talking about the 54 World Series share when I was looking this up. I think they said that the losing share was
$6,700. $6,700?
And I'm going to guess that your entire
salary
is $54,000.
That's right.
It was probably
that's
about
right.
$5,000. So that's quite a paycheck.
That's right. And, you know, of course, that was a lot of money. It's just like, you know, like the big, they call them the big three or the big four in Cleveland, those fellas. But when you talk to Bob Lemon or like Al Rosen or Bob Feller or Mike Garcia or any of those fellas, established players in major leagues, when I come up, they said in order to make big money, you should get a 3 good years behind you. Well, the big money then was $35,000, $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bob Lemon 1 year, I don't know the dollar amounts, but 1 year, Bob Lemon won 20 games. They wanted to cut him. Well, you know, that's unheard of today. If you win 15 games, and you know, there's a tremendous raise, and that's good. Hey, I'm all for the player,
yeah.
But just to show you how the owners had you under their thumb so much, and though our times were great times, I wouldn't trade my experiences for anything. I played against and with some of the greatest people that ever played this game of baseball. But there were so many good ball players out there. you know, when you have 16 teams, that's all, and you have, what, three AAA teams, and I don't know how many AA teams, and you had A, Class A, you had Class B, Class C, and Class D. Minor league ball was big. A lot of competition for your job.
I'm trying to think of the question that I was going to slip. Maybe they'll come back to me. Did you have to do some work in the off season?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. There was no taking trips to Europe. You had to have a job.
At least not every year, right?
You had to have a job, you know, to support your family. You're always looking for a job, and you just couldn't take any job because, after all, you didn't want to put yourself in a position where you could hurt yourself physically. But you have to have a job.
What kind of work did you do in the offseason?
Well, I did a little bit of public relation work. I worked at the Sibling Tire Company 1 year. And Gene Woodling, I know, we often talk about, he was with Goodyear, you know, where, you know, our winter so-called off-season was a third shift at some rubber plant, you know. And I'm not saying that was bad for us. I'm just saying that's what we did.
Yeah.
But you had to, in order to support yourself, you had to get off-season employment. When I came out of the Marine Corps, I did play winter ball. In fact, I'll show you how you pick up information that's going to help you. I was playing with San Diego in 1951, and we had a trainer who had played some professional ball in the Coast League. His name was Lester Cook, I remember. He was our trainer, our traveling secretary, our bus driver when we had to go by bus. Anyway, he was everything, you know. And he said to me at the end of the season, he says, I would like for you to stay out here in San Diego in the warm weather, and when you go to spring training next year with Cleveland, I want you to be in great shape. You got to be in great shape when you go to spring training. Unless they got a great deal of money invested in you and you're a superstar, you have to make an impression. You got to go in there. And he said, when you step on that field, you got to be in mid-season form. Well, that's when I came up to Cleveland, then I went into the Marine Corps, but I never forgot that. And when I came out of the Marine Corps, I went to play winter ball in Panama. And then I came back and went to spring training with Cleveland. Well, there was about a month. And a month, I think I came back from Panama sometime in late January, and I think March 1st she had to be in spring training. So I had a couple of weeks or so, and I kept myself in shape. I threw every day in the gymnasium down here and did a little running. But the point is, when I went to spring training with Cleveland, and we took infield for the first time, of course they always tell you, don't throw, take your time. Well, I was in mid-season form, and I think I made a heck of an impression because I got to start the first exit by playing some exhibition games right off. So that little bit of advice really helped me. So you never know in this game or in life where you're going to pick up a word or two that can help you somewhere in your career or help you enjoy your life.
From the immortal Lester Cook.
Lester Cook, that's right. Those guys make up the game of baseball. I mean, he loved the game. You know, there's a fellow out in California now around San Diego, played some Major League Baseball. He loves this game. I haven't seen him for years. He was with San Diego Padre when I was there. He's from Zanesville, Ohio. In fact, there's a great school in Zanesville, Ohio called Grant, named after the president. And he and I, not at the same time, but went to that high school. And there's a fellow in Zanesville, I think that's great, having a little town like Zanesville, having... I'm sure there's more than one Major League ball player came out of there, but at least they went to the same school together, and his name is Whitey Wheelman, and he loves the game, and I'm not sure what he's doing right now, but if he's living, I will guarantee you he is around somebody's locker room. He just loves to be around players, do things, and I would think he's almost a legend in San Diego.
The question I was going to ask you, and I remember what it is now, I know in the early 50s, Allie Reynolds and some other guys were trying to get some sort of either pension plan or some sort of union started. And then in the mid-60s, you know, Robin Roberts and Vega and some other guys eventually accomplished that. But what was there any sort of activity of that sort when you were playing?
No. The Of course, we had that. We were the Baseball Players Association. We had that. We were contributing so many dollars a day. I think we contributed to our stock pension like $344 a year. You had to be in the major leagues 5 years before you become vested.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be in the major leagues 60 days before you start contributing to the plan. Those were, if I can remember, the rules. From what I know, and you, in your interviews, you can talk to people that were playing during this particular time, but I think how the pension plan really got started was around 1946, 45, 46, some of these ball players, the Mexican League was a threat, so-called threat, and they were paying such high bonuses as $60,000 for these players to come down here and play. And from the way I understand it, that's got the idea that, you know, maybe we should have a pension plan. And these ball players, I don't know all of them are involved. I know Reynolds was one of them. I know Gene Woodling during his career was involved. I know Bob Feller was involved. I know Robin Roberts was involved. And there has been some ball players since then that's been involved. Even today, we have some ex-ball players that really got this thing. They're interested in doing a good job. Former ball players, that is. And that's played after I came along. But from what I can remember, that's how it really got started. And there was an attorney, someone in Pittsburgh, I believe, Pittsburgh, I don't know, it was Rip Sewell. I'm just guessing here, but may have been involved. And in spring training, they used to give you $25 a week for spending money. And I think this attorney happened to get that through. His name was Murphy, and he used to call it Murphy money. Did you get your Murphy money today? $25 a week.
Wow.
And so there is no doubt in my mind, of course, I've been very fortunate. I have over 17 and a half years in the major leagues. So the pension has been very good for players, not only me, for other players, and it's continued to be. Has done well for us. There's a few players that really worked hard on it, and we got to be thankful for whoever got that idea back then. And it should be. As you mentioned once before, Robin Roberts had a lot to do with it. I know Bob Feller. There's been a lot of players who had Eddie Robinson. He gets mentioned a lot. I had spent some time on a team with Eddie Robinson. And sure, other people that I can't recall that could help that pension plan. And I do remember when Marvin Miller came along, the hierarchy of the baseball world didn't care to have Marvin Miller represent the players. But the people in charge of the players at that particular time spent a lot of time and interest in having, selecting a person. And I know this, but when you put a person in that position, he's going to step on a lot of toes. He's done a lot for the players. I'm not saying that someone else couldn't have done the same, but after all, he was in that position. And he certainly, he got the salary increase, the minimum salary, arbitration, whether you think it's good or bad, it's there. He's upgraded the quality of living for the players, there was a lot of money to be made and was being made, and it wasn't really drifting down to the players' end of it as much as it should. When you take guys like, when you can say Bob Feller was pitching, or Robin Roberts is pitching, or some of the bigger names were pitching, and you have 30,000 people or 40,000 people instead of 10, why, these people should be compensated for it. That's the way I feel about it. And so I think that I'm sure from any ballplayer standpoint that establishing a baseball association or a union, you want to call it, certainly helped the player, and it certainly hasn't hurt the game.
Not at all. I think if somebody did the research on this and look back at every ticket that's ever been sold to a baseball game, I don't think one has ever been sold because somebody wanted to go and see an owner.
So, right.
So I'm like you, especially in this dispute that we're having here between 94 and 95, mm-hmm. I'm behind the players 100%.
I don't have to ask you to leave them because I'm for the players too. but in any negotiations, there's always has to be compromise from both sides, and the players take a bashing on it because they don't have the publicity out there all every day trying to plead their case. But there are some things that maybe they're going to have to give in a little bit. But basically, they're right, and they got to play baseball with major league players. You know, if I want to see minor league ball, I'll go to a minor league city. I'm not going to a major league ballpark and say these are major league players.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the quality of there's not that many good players around that you can spread your talent like that. And when you go, you want to see a major league game. I mean, if I were a 10-year-old youngster and my father wanted to take me to a major league game, well, what I look in the paper and I'd say, well, gee, Dad, I want to go see Barry Bonds, or I want to go see someone that maybe the great pitcher at Boston,
Clemens
pitch. And so he said, well, hey, I'll get tickets for that game. I mean, they draw people to the ballpark, and of course you're going to probably draw some fans, but you know, I'm talking about every day. You want to see when Ted Williams came into Cleveland, people want to see Ted Williams or Joe DiMaggio, or take Philadelphia, for example. They're great stars. Robin Robertson, Curt Simmons during my time. Well, the Yankees, Whitey Ford pitch. And when we played, you know, when Lemon Fowler or when any of these outstanding pitchers or players, you want to see them. So they're the draw.
Mm-hmm. Were you superstitious at all as a ball player?
No. I was never that way.
How about anybody that you played with? Are there any cases that stand out of somebody being really wacky about them?
No, not that I really know. If I did, I wasn't that observant. Probably that's it. Probably I wasn't very observant back then. At least I don't remember. And I'm sure there's people that park their car in the same position if they had a good day the day before, yeah, or wear the same sweatshirts. I never really got involved in that. I don't know why. I guess maybe I didn't have that many sweatshirts. I just had to wear one, good or bad. I don't know.
Was there any, when you played with the Indians, you wore number 18, and then when you were with Washington that turned into Minnesota, you wore number 8.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any logic to that, or
no
reason they just threw that one at you?
They just whatever handed me.
Yeah.
I just felt that put the uniform on, and I'd do my best. Yeah. And, of course, they retired 18 in Cleveland, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's because Mel Harder, who should be in that Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. If you had to, this is a great talk show question anyway. Could you pick a team? It could be a players that you played with, or guys that either come before or after. But if you had to pick a favorite player of yours at every position, and also including a manager, do you have a team like that or no?
I never really gave a thought, you know. In all fairness, if I were to pick a team, it would have to be people that they'd have to come from the Indians or the Twins or the Tigers, because I'd watch them every day, and you really know those players. Sometimes you don't realize how good a player he is until you play against him. You see the ups and downs when you're with the team of every player. Sometimes when you're observing the other team, you only see the good days. You know he had bad days, but you don't see him. So you say, gee, did this guy ever have a bad day?
Yeah, talking along those lines, I wanted to ask you before, when you first came up, an early win was with the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And then you two were on different teams. What's the difference between having early win on your side and then having to get up and bat against you?
No problem. No? You know, I hit against Wynn a lot in batting practice, too. And he threw at me a lot in batting practice. I hit the ball back in the middle. As soon as I knew I hit that ball back in the middle, I would start running out of that batting cage. He whacked me a few times on the legs. But Gus, he was a big, burly, rough guy, but he had a heart like a kid. You know, he was really a good person. I feel honored. I really do. I feel honored and proud that I was associated with, you know, the Lemons and the Fellers and the Garcias and the Rosens and the Stricklands and the people that I involved in. You know, you always mention the names, the more popular names, but, you know, we had Sam Dentier, who was a good fellow, and Hank Majeski and Wally Westlake, who I remembered. And, of course, I roomed with my two great guys, and Dale Mitchell and Vic Wirtz, so, and Rudy Regalado. So I feel proud I established a relationship with those people.
Well, here's talk show question number two, and this is the second of the two talk show questions. How's this game of baseball different from 40 years ago when you were playing?
Well, from what I observe, mostly from television, they seem to, as playing the game, the strategy of the game, I think that when we were five runs down, you wouldn't steal a base, try to steal a base. They do today and don't think anything of it. You know. Power, it seems like to me that today's ball, I know today's ball players are bigger. I think today's ball players are stronger. I talk to former ball players and we have discussions and some of them say, well, I see ball players hitting that ball so far. And they say, well, they don't think the pitching is up to par. But what I've noticed today is that a lot of your hitters, just from the hitting standpoint, a lot of the hitters can hit the ball out of the ballpark to the opposite field. They hit the ball from, they use the whole ballpark. And to me, that indicates to me, I know they're stronger. So when you're stronger, chances are you're a little quicker with a bat, and therefore the pitching has to be a little better. What I observe from the pitching standpoint is that I don't see they seem to have a tendency to want to stick with one pitch more than maybe going to another pitch. We mentioned Early Win. You know, when Early Win pitched, Early Win had, he was a super competitor. And Early Win had a little rising fastball, had a little slider. You shouldn't throw a slider high. Early Win struck out more people on high sliders than anybody in the game. And, of course, he had a little knuckleball. And if he would be early in the game, if they would hit him, well, most pitchers, if that happened to most pitchers, they want to go harder and harder and harder. Early Win would go the other way. He'd start changing speeds. He'd start throwing his fastball with a little less velocity. He just would just tinker around more or less. And he was very successful. Then, you know, this may go on for two or three or four innings. Then all at once, maybe his fastball would pick up a little bit. So he was able to adjust. That's the reason he won over 300 games. Am I right, 300 games? Because he was able to adjust out there. And maybe not throwing the, you know, there was probably a lot of pitchers in the game had better stuff than Early Win, maybe. But he knew how to use it, and that's the key. So I don't see that type of pitching today. Of course, I'm observing this from a distance. And there sure must be some pitchers around that's doing just like Wynn. But I see a hitter come up and hit a home run, and he comes up again and hits a home run or gets a base hit, and it seems like it's the same pitch all the time. That's what I'm more or less referring to. Mm-hmm. But I would say this, there are a lot of good baseball players out there today. There's a lot of good ball players that playing today that people in the former players and the press they don't want to give them credit for being as good as they are. Because it is a tough game. It's a tough game. To play every day, and you got the cameras on you. Everything is magnified. Players today. I have a lot of respect for today's players. Really do.
What have you done since your coaching days ended there in Detroit?
Well, I got into the investment business, and then I was doing that and enjoyed it. But we had a sporting goods store here in Barberton, and the gentleman was going to retire, and we had been friends, and still are good friends, and he told me he was going to retire, and he'd like to know if I would be interested in the sporting goods business. And I really was. So the way I did it, I was able to quit my investment business, and I worked just on my own 1 year in the store before I finalized the deal. And I finalized the deal, and I bought the store, and I owned it for over 17 years. And I enjoyed it, and there again, I was very lucky. And I had great time doing it, and then in 1990, I sold it in July, just kind of a spur of the moment deal, at least on my part was spur of the moment. My wife, who I've been married to 46 years, encouraged me. She made a suggestion. She said, you ought to be thinking about selling your store so we can do some things that we always talked about. And of course, I enjoyed my business so much, I thought, well, what I would do, I would probably find somebody to want to run it, and I'd just be a part-time deal. But I guess I was looking for something that doesn't exist, you know. So, mm-hmm. But when I came back from my vacation that year in January or February, I got back. I went back to the store, and saw all the mail and everything backed up, you know, and so I came home that evening and I said to her, I'm going to sell the store. She said, well, why are you going to sell the store? What made you make the decision? You were against it. I said, something just tells me that I'm ready to get out of this business. So I made the decision, and you know, I had no problem selling it, and I was out of it. I think it was July 10th or something in 1990. Mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed my life. I've enjoyed that, but I've had a good time ever since. So I've been very lucky. I consider myself I've been very fortunate, put it that way.
Two questions to go. What do you look back on as your favorite memory, or to phrase it another way, your biggest thrill from playing baseball?
Well, if you look for individual thrills, I remember we were going on our Eastern trip. I think it was the last one that we used to take. I think we used to go into each city three times, I believe. Now I think they get there twice at the most. And we were starting in Philadelphia, and Al Lopez, who had very few meetings, but he did hold one before the trip, and all he said was, just take care of yourself. And he was very, his rules weren't much, but he wanted you to buy what rules he had the rules, but he didn't have that many. Take care of yourself off the field. If you have any problems, I want to hear about them. Let's play the game the way it should be played. And something I remembered, he said, let's don't get too smart, because it's difficult enough to play the game the way it should be played. And let's go out and have a good time, and we'll win this thing. So we start out in Philadelphia, Shry Park, isn't it? Or used to be. It's not named that now.
It's long gone.
Oh, yeah.
It's Veterans Stadium, that monstrosity.
But is it the same location?
No, Shry Park was up between around 21st Street and something other, and Veterans is, I was there once. It's kind of in an industrial area. Here. I don't think they're anywhere near each other.
Well, anyhow, we ran into first game, tough game over there. I think the score was tied. Anyhow, Jim Hegan was pinching for in the seventh or eighth inning. And I came up in the either top of the ninth or top of the tenth. And there was a left-hand pitcher on the mound, and I was the only catcher, so they couldn't take me out. You know, when I was playing in the minor leagues, you were about whether you could hit left-handed better than right-handed. You just played. And I never really found out the difference, so I got to the big league when they say, well, you're not playing today because there's a left-handed pitcher. you say, why? Yeah. But, and I come up with a man, the score was tied, and I come up with a winning run on first base, and I hit a triple, which is, I don't hit very many triples, but I hit a triple, and we went on to win the game. And that was, I remember that was a big thrill for me. And then just winning the pennant in 54, your first year up, was a great thrill. And, of course, there's other, you know, thrills that you like throughout your career, but I always pointed out that time that I hit the triple. And then, of course, the two pennants, the pennant in Cleveland and also in pennant years in Minnesota. And then the one in Detroit stands out because of Denny McLean's accomplishment and also the riots in Detroit and from the riots from 1967 and the attitude of the people from 67 to 68 was a great feeling to know that people were pulling together rather than fighting each other, and that gave you a good feeling. So I remember those things.
The flip side of that question is the last one. Is there anything, as you look back, is there any one thing or is there something that you could go back, if you could go back and do again or do over or change something, is there anything that comes to mind?
If I had my there's a song that now, and I find my life to live over or something. But if I had to do it all over again, about my career, my own personal career, I would have tried to develop myself more physically. I would have got stronger. In my time, lifting weights or this bodybuilding was not a part of it. You were discouraged about it. But now mostly off of what I heard, they have weightlifting equipment, exercise equipment in the clubhouse. Today they have more things to help you develop your swing or your fielding. I think that's what I would have liked to have been. I think that I could have got stronger. Of course, when you get older, experience teaches you a lot of things. But that question, that's the way I would answer that. I wouldn't change anything else, though. I had a great marriage, and I have one daughter and two grandsons that they're great for life. And people that I've met, super. I have no regrets. I've been asked several times, like all ex-ball players, what do you think of today's ball players, the money they're making? Hey, I root for them. I've had my opportunities, and I have no complaints. I'm healthy. My wife is healthy, and fortunately, my business and baseball financially has been good to us. And I'm all for the players, but I like my time. I like the Vic Wertz and the Dale Mitchells and the Mickey Mantles, the Moose Garins and the Mickey Vernons. Great names, great people. Excuse me.